When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress.
Detective Suarez conducted her statement analysis on one person and not the other. That's undisputed. But greater than the problem I have with the analysis is the problem I have with its results. Her findings influenced her entire investigation. She went into this investigation with blinders, guilt blinders. She made a notation in the conclusion of her statement analysis, examined content of suspect's phone.
The following day, Detective Suarez filed paperwork to seize Keith's phone.
And everything she found on my client's phone, she continued to view with bias.
There were three things that came to light upon reviewing Keith's digital activity on the night of April 19th. The first was that he changed his relationship status on Facebook from in a relationship to single. This occurred 30 minutes before arriving at Riley Page's apartment. The second thing that came to light was a text exchange between him and a male friend sent 20 minutes before he arrived at Riley Page's apartment.
Today at the web series Peace Table, the topic is trial evidence. Evidence in quotes. And we're leading off with the Montgomery trial. I just have to say this. 21-year-old kids change their Facebook status as often as they change their underwear. It means nothing. What matters is that crass language used by the defendant is now being construed as evidence that he's a rapist. I'm sorry, but that's wrong.
I had no problem with the state introducing Keith's text correspondence. It went to intent. He plans to have sex with Riley that night before even making contact with her.
Fine. Maybe he did. But that's not intent to rape. That's intent to have sex.
Fine. But the text still went to discredit Keith's statement to the police. He told the police he just went there to see a friend. The text showed differently.
Good God. Maybe he didn't want to tell the police he was acting like a churlish, bragging idiot to his friends. The police didn't ask him what he told his friends. They asked him what he did. He's being painted as an offender because he sent an offensive text message. That's not right.
He's being painted as an offender because he raped a girl.
Show me the evidence. Where's the evidence? If you say the text exchange, that's absurd.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm putting up this text exchange on the board while we speak. I'm doing this because I want you to remember it. I want you to see it typed out the way it would have appeared on Heath's phone the night he visited Riley Page. Remember, half an hour before he went to Riley's, he changed his relationship status on Facebook from his phone. He changed his relationship status from in a relationship to single. 20 minutes before he knocked on her door, to her surprise, I'll add, his friend texts him, "Saw your status. You and Lila cool?" Keith replies, "It's over." His friend states, "Sucks. Sorry, man." Keith replies, quote, "Don't be. Already moved on. Going to go get my dick wet now," end quote. To which his friend states, "Haha, have fun." This is a man stating a very specific intention to engage in sexual activity with a partner who didn't even know he was arriving. Think about that.
This is a boy with a bruised ego talking to a peer. This is a boy who was just cheated on and humiliated. Was it a crass thing to say? Yes. Is it the way 21-year-old boys frequently speak to one another? Again, yes. Does it mean Keith Montgomery raped a woman? No. Whatever it means, it does not mean that.
We are looking at a pattern of Mr. Montgomery's attitudes towards women. He told the detective he went to Riley Page's apartment that night to see a friend. He told his own friend he was going to, well, I won't repeat it, but it's up there on the board.
To suggest that any of us should be held accountable for every bit of slang or stupid comment or hurt feelings we express when we're upset is unfair. To paint an extraneous, fleeting comment from one guy to another in a vulnerable moment is something nefarious, is silly. Come on.
Those were the first two important items to come to light upon the examination of Keith's cell phone. The third item was a collection of downloaded videos on Keith's phone. Adult videos.
What's more offensive than introducing text messages to imply someone's a rapist is introducing their pornography to imply they're a rapist.
Oh, if a man is accused of molesting a child and there's kiddie porn in his possession, that's not relevant?
Do not draw that comparison, please. These were videos of adults.
Displaying non-consensual sex.
Displaying a rape fantasy between two consenting paid actors. There were a lot of videos on Keith's phone. He probably downloaded a bundle.
They speak to a psychologically damaged person.
I find that very offensive. People with rape fantasies are not psychologically damaged. People who watch forceful or violent pornography are not psychologically damaged. The same people who champion sexual freedom and non-judgment, the blue liberals watching this trial, are denouncing Keith for his porn. Why?
Because he's being accused of rape.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Okay, so he had porn. Lots of men have porn downloaded onto their devices. I want to be clear, it's not the presence of pornography in Keith's possession that is material here. It is the subject of the pornography in Keith's possession.
There were over a dozen videos downloaded, but only two were problematic.
We found one video that featured a woman asleep on her bed, while a man with a chloroform rag, well, ostensibly it was chloroform, entered her private room and held it to her face while he had sexual intercourse with her.
Did you find any other relevant videos on Keith's phone?
We did. There was a second video in which a woman is bound and naked on her bed. She's crying out for the man to stop. The man has sex with her regardless, sometimes covering her mouth with his hand, sometimes letting her scream. It was a more violent encounter than the first.
You know, what other kind of porn the sheriff's office found on my client's phone? Average porn. Guy on girl, consensual sex. Girl on girl, consensual sex. It's porn. My client is 21 years old. I'm shocked and very, very sad that a collection of videos is being used to cast my client as a sexual deviant. Every young man has pornography on their devices. This is the internet age we live in. Two videos showing questionable but common sexually explicit material does not a rapist make. What that does make is a very young, very normal, 21-year-old boy.
Keith Montgomery stated an intention to have sex with Ms. Page on the night in question. He had violent, non-consensual pornography on his phone in the wake of a woman filing a complaint of sexual battery. Yes, these are red flags.
An embarrassing, unfoundedly braggadocious text message and two unsavory videos among a dozen stored on his phone would never have been studied with the suspicion they were it not for Detective Suarez's bias in this investigation. She alone concluded my client's innocuous statement was suspicious, so she dug up further corroborating information to support her theory. Keith Montgomery was railroaded. He's not a picture-perfect choir boy, but what has he really done? Written, download, and text immature things. That's all. He didn't hurt anybody.
I find it interesting that a 21-year-old is referred to as a boy by,
Because you think he's a man?
Well, I just think it's infantilizing someone who, at this point, has legal rights to do everything, including drink alcohol.
Definitely,
and
yeah.
Technically has been a legal adult for 3 years.
Definitely, I mean, he's definitely a man.
Not to say that there isn't immaturity associated with, you know, he's young. He's got a lot to, a lot of life ahead of him, but...
Well, that was the defense attorney talking, right?
Yeah. He's
calling him a boy, so mm-hmm. It was very pointed.
Yes.
Manipulative.
Well, She's trying to defend her client.
Right.
But it's deflect getting responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So would you say the discovery of those texts and videos, how impactful are those for you guys?
I think they're impactful.
How impactful?
I don't think they're definitive because... Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, as far as, I mean, if we're looking at doubt of any of these things, I mean, the first one, there's a single, he's single status. Okay, that's...
That doesn't mean much to me.
Not much, no. Me neither. Especially for, again, it's like a 21-year-old yeah. boy, man, whatever. Like, I feel like anyone in their 20s, maybe even 30s, early 30s, yeah. is, you know, can bounce around with that. So that's not that impactful for me, the first one.
Although the timing of it is, what, as soon as things end with his girlfriend, his ex that cheated on him?
Yeah.
My concern was with what was in some of the videos. That was my concern. Now, also what I found funny is whenever she said normal porn, because it's like, what is normal porn? Like, you know. You know, that's very
subjective.
Right. What's normal to me is very different from somebody else. So, but anyways, like,
well, yeah,
the chloroform thing, and the other thing, when were those videos downloaded? Were they watched that day?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, when were they downloaded? Yeah. Is this something that's been on his phone for a long time? Or was he sitting there in between the Facebook status, the, you know... not so tasteful text.
Right. See, I don't know. And I don't know if that the time of that means much to me, because it's like I would just, you know, just because this guy watches, I would hate to be judged on anything
on the porn
that I've watched. Yes.
Yeah. No. I get it.
Any, I would hate to make any even assumptions about me based on things that I've watched here or there. So, although I find it really gross what he was watching and suspect and eyebrow raising, and I really still. Don't even want to judge, because I know that those were actors in that video and it wasn't real, and that those are people that are trying to make money and all of that. And so although I think it's gross and subject, and why do you have this downloaded on your phone when you can just stream this stuff, you know?
They were saying how it's, you know, non-consensual porn. But really, what you were just saying, the people that are the actors in these movies, it's called consensual non-consent.
Right.
And that's a thing.
Yeah.
And so whether he's in the fantasy of it being non-consensual, or is in his head it's a fantasy of consensual non-consent, we will never know.
Yeah.
What I didn't like was how it was implied that the investigator looked at these videos differently because of the, what's it called, statement analysis being the reason that she looked at these videos differently, because I think anyone would look at these videos in the same way, regardless of the statement analysis.
I think all of these three different pieces of evidence would have been looked at in a similar way no matter what, because she's doing her job as an investigator and as a detective. So that was perplexing to me from the defense.
I have an unsettling feeling. I don't know. Like, it's not that I appreciate the investigative work. At the same time, I feel like it's almost a violation of someone's privacy. I don't know. I know that sounds silly. That may sound silly.
Yeah,
I don't
know. You give that up when you're accused of a crime.
Sure. But at the same time, it's just like you said, like, my personal life shouldn't be put on display due to one possible act. Do you know what I mean?
Which aspect are you referring to exactly? I mean, obviously, something has to be dug into. Evidence has to be brought up. So where do you think a line was crossed?
Like, text-wise, I get it. Downloading, I mean, I don't know. Downloading someone's pornographic history to me is somewhat invasive. Text, I get.
It was on his phone. Text. It was on his phone. They checked out his phone. I mean, to me, it's like, don't have stuff on your phone. It's like, I think in this day and age, everyone, at least in the back of their mind, knows that their stuff can be hacked, can be looked into.
Watch it and delete it.
Right.
I don't know.
It's not funny, but...
It's
You know, I mean,
you don't need to save it.
It's just another mark of his immaturity, right?
But he's not on trial for his immaturity.
Right.
It's not helping his case.
No, it is eyebrow raising. It's okay, you're accused of rape and you have rape stuff on your phone. That's not good. Yeah. That is not good, but it's not enough to...
Oh, my God.
It's not damning.
So let's just imagine those videos aren't even part of that for a minute. Yeah. What about the text that he sent?
Yes.
With the expectation... of
sexual activity.
Sexual activity, intercourse, let's say, before he even arrived. And his story is, I'm going to see a friend, right? A good friend.
Right.
So that concerns me much more than the videos that were on his
Completely, because it feels like we've caught him in a lie.
And I don't know about that being a violation of privacy. I feel like people who are under investigation, their texts and their phone calls can be used as evidence.
Just like Riley's sexual history, that week, that day, the month prior.
That's an invasion of her privacy too then.
They've and sacrificed that
in this situation. And that text bothers me much more that there was...
For me, it's like... I kind of agree with the defense attorney that it's how guys talk, you know, or at least to their friends. Like, a lot of times young guys or guys...
How dare you.
I know, but it's like, I don't think... People brag. Guys brag, and they say things, and they try to pump themselves up, and it's like, just because he said that doesn't mean he was going to rape someone.
Well, yeah, that's like me, like, driving down a highway and be like, oh, God, I'm going to kill that person. You know what I mean? I don't actually want to kill that person, but maybe that's just him... Again, what the defense attorney said, just saying a kid who's, oh, no, I'm fine, dude. I'm about to go get my dick wet. You know what I mean? Like, is it gross? Yeah, it's disgusting. I would never allow my family to say that. However, you know what I mean?
Well, the immaturity is one thing, that the choice of language, yes. But I think what I find troubling about the text is the fact, and the Facebook status thing, is the fact that in terms of what he said to his friend, and in terms of what Keith put out on Facebook, he's making it clear that he's done with Lila. And yet, earlier in our discussions, he seemed to imply that there was some chance he was going to get back with Lila. And he left that note on the windshield suggesting that, don't mention anything. I don't want, Lila to find out about this. It's like, well, you're done with her. You've said that via text to a friend. You've declared it on Facebook. So you can't have it both ways. So
but
to
have
me,
you ever said
to me
that you regret, that though? I feel like that's like a regret. Like, if I were to sleep with someone, I felt regret after that, and I'm just like, oh, damn it, that's not what I wanted to do.
Well, those are extreme behaviors within a very short amount of time. I mean, regardless of whether or not he feels regret for those actions, he's completely pushing this person away, publicly displaying it, sharing it with a close friend via text, and then saying, I'm going to go... see a close friend. And
he's definitely been back and forth and saying, but I have friends who have been starting a relationship, been really hot and heavy in a relationship. I love this guy. They break up. Oh, he did this bullshit. He did that. We broke up. Then they're back together. And she's all over the place and stuff that she's telling me. And I just get a little bit of that. It's like, just because he says, I'm done with her, oh, I love her. It's like, he could be confused.
I guess the problem
is confused.
Well, yes, but Keith's narrative has just been, from start to finish, inconsistent. There have been backwards and forwards. I mean, he's definitely been lying about certain things or withholding certain things.
Or just trying to paint himself in a certain way, knowing that he's in trouble.
True.
Well, I don't think he would really want someone to know that he sent a text to his bro saying, oh, by the way.
Yeah, if I did that, or if I talked a certain way, like...
Yeah.
Of course.
It's kind of like the... I hate to say it, but it's like the Donald Trump thing of the Billy Bush.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Locker room talk.
That's what I keep on thinking about, too.
I hate to say it, because it's like, it's gross, and it's like, but those guys, if they knew her on that mic, would never have said that. You know, and same thing, if this guy knew his text was going to be broadcast in a court, he would have never said that. Mm-hmm. But it's still the truth. And they did still say it, so it's there.
And that is... Given the circumstances, that is...
Alarming, yeah.
Well, it's alarming, but yes, I see your point in that would he have spoken that way if he thought his text was going to be displayed for public viewing? No, almost certainly not. Does it incriminate him? No, almost certainly not. But it's just the fact that That, coupled with his original testimony, coupled with the note on the car, coupled with... There's just... It's been... There has not been a 100% consistent position or story.
I think it does
Keith.
Incriminate him.
In what way?
Which part?
I think the text. I think that it shows at this point that he went there with the intention of some sort of sexual activity.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think intention. Sorry, continue. I'm sorry.
I think it does. I think it shows that that was his entire reason for going there.
And I agree.
Absolutely.
He said to us is either false or purposefully muddied. And I think that at this point, if we're seeing her situation and the fact that they haven't spoken for a month, and we're seeing that he's going there with that intention and he's already so riled up, that creates a situation where it's not so far-fetched that he could have done this. And that's where my head is at right now.
And if he had that intention, then maybe hearing no wouldn't have been something that he was willing to comply with.
Does he want to go through that again?
Yeah. Anyways.
But I think maybe, because it's like, I think we've all, I'll speak for myself, I've had times where I've thought I was maybe going to have sex and I didn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean intention. I think that's more of an expectation.
Like, true, but what
you
mindset
didn't.
Were you
right,
in
I did not.
when
they
you
They did
were,
anyways.
What was, well... Don't want to dig into your personal life here, but
no,
I'm
just saying,
like,
in the hill history of my life.
He's going there, though, definitely kind of on a mission. He's literally just been cheated on,
broken up.
He's wounded. And he sent that text, which, yes, definitely, regardless of whether or not he would actually carry through with...
I'm getting my dick wet tonight no matter what. That's not there. I mean, I'm getting my... You know what I'm saying? I mean... I don't know.
Again, I don't think it's in and of itself definitive. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can just say, well, that's it, case closed. But it's really problematic.
Well, I agree it's problematic. I'm just saying, it doesn't make him a rapist.
No, because, like, look at her behavior before that, where she was, consistently texting him and calling him and all of that.
Which she hadn't been doing.
She hadn't done that
for
weeks.
This, I understand that, but I'm going to say a term that I don't want to say. In his mind, she probably thought she was an easy lay. That sounds terrible. I know that sounds terrible. But there's some people where you're like, if I go to this person, I could probably have
sex. So then how upsetting is it when he doesn't actually get what he wants, when she does not acquiesce, when she says no, when she pushes him off? If he thinks that he's actually going to get that
and
in that
I,
moment as this wounded puppy.
I agree that he did probably think she was.
100%. 100%.
I hate that term.
She's
I'm sorry
still,
to say that.
It's okay. I still think she had the right to say no. But if he already had his mind made up that it was happening, instead of thinking it was going to happen and going home because it didn't, like some gentleman, he just went for it anyways.
That's the question.
The question you have to ask yourself is, was this a fair investigation? Because if it wasn't, we can't trust the results this prosecution is putting forth. Garbage in, garbage out. A crass text message and two pornos is what their investigation revealed after analyzing Keith's statement, examine content of suspect's phone. If the police scrutinized any random phone in this room, chances are they'd find something that looked incriminating or could be construed as incriminating. Here's the timeline. The complainant comes forward and makes a statement. Her statement is not analyzed. My client comes down to the sheriff's office voluntarily and gives his own statement, a statement of denial. His statement is analyzed and somehow indicates possible deception. According to the efforts of a detective's 8-hour online course in a questionable and largely unrecognized social science, that same detective subpoenaed my client's cell phone activity and discovered an ugly juvenile text message and a collection of pornographic videos, two of which are especially unsavory. And now there's a case. I'm sorry. Is this cooperation? Is this what we've come to? Is this the result of a fair, unbiased, and thorough investigation?
Detective Suarez took Riley Page's statement
and she called the suspect down to the sheriff's office for an interview the following day. She recorded the interview and made several notes, including one analysis. Following the receipt of information from both parties, she examined Keith's digital history and conduct on the night in question. She found a text message that spoke to intent, and she found two videos that featured such deplorable acts of non-consensual sexual violence. It spoke to a disturbing and escalating pattern. Dr. Ward, is it common for rapists to watch violent porn featuring rape and other non-consensual acts?
Yes, that's common for sexual predators who rape.
And is watching violent porn, in your professional opinion, a precursor to acting on violent urges?
You're talking about escalation, and yes, sexual predators often watch violent porn or read violent stories before acting on a violent impulse. However, eventually the time may come when these outlets, through porn or what have you, no longer satisfy them. And that is the point in which a violent sexual predator will act on their urges.
Thank you.
Dr. Ward, do psychologically healthy people sometimes review violent pornographic material?
Yes, sometimes.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I feel like it is a little messed up that... Well, I'm torn on it. I feel it's messed up that that his statement was analyzed and hers wasn't, first of all. I feel like they both should have been analyzed. But on the other side, I don't believe in this technology that much anyway. So it doesn't really bother me either way. It's like, I feel like, you know, maybe we'll get here sometime soon in the near future where we will have a 99.999 or 100% truth detector test. But until then, I don't know. I don't have stock in that stuff.
It's just her being an investigator and doing her job. I don't see it as any special thing that she took this course. And, I mean, she was just enhancing her skills to do her job. But even if the porn part wasn't there, the text is the big thing for me.
Well, I like what the defense said in regards to this being a fair trial, because if we can't get Riley's statement analysis, I understand that at this point it's not going to happen. At the same time, if you're going to scrutinize one person's phone, get the other person's phone and see what maybe she said as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's starting to get very biased. It's very one-sided.
He didn't text her then to say he was coming over, right? He just showed up with booze.
Unannounced. Yes.
But even still, maybe there's a text from her to a friend saying, oh, I drove by Keith's house today. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, maybe...
That's a fair point.
It could be anything. It's quite possible. It could be anything. She could have porn on her phone. Who the hell knows? Like, but honestly, I feel like it's starting to get very one-sided.
I do agree. To me, it's not very one side, but it does seem one sided. I think his phone should be looked at. I think that all that thing on his phone is fair game. You know, getting the porn on his phone. I think the tech. I don't think that's railroading anyone being accused of anything. I think that's totally fine. I would have liked a little more on her side, but that doesn't bother me hugely. But
yeah. I wish that they would have opened her technology up for investigation, just because I think that could, like, equalize in a way where I don't think we would find anything, but I think that maybe
somebody
it would make this decision easier for some of us in history.
Being railroaded or one-sidedness. Right. If they would have just looked in and cleared it up and be like, fine, done. Not?
That would help me a lot, at least.
In terms of the pornography, though, one of the issues I have with that being used as evidence is definitely a certain bias in how it's presented. I mean, it kind of makes me think of the violent video game debate of being like, oh, if you play this kind of video game, then you're going to become a killer. And it's like, well, think about the millions and millions of people that play these games. I mean, that they don't
that
all just
killers.
Go out, yes, yes. And start. It's I don't
right,
know.
Just because the Columbine kids watched it doesn't mean that most are.
Exactly. And
they were saying how, you know, people of sound mind and nonviolent behavior could watch these videos and not act on them. And I also believe that you know, alcohol is known to make people more violent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if they already have this, maybe completely sober, this is not an act that would be a fantasy or want to be repeated. But with alcohol in the system and them having the visual image of this other thing, I could see how that could all feed into building into something that's what being is being laid out before us.
Mm-hmm. I could see that too, although that's a very speculative at this point. I mean, anyone can have you know, fantasies about things. It's just a matter of the line between that and the reality. I think just in terms of evidence, just the porn being found on Keith's phone is it's not pleasant. It's not it doesn't say good things about him, or doesn't sort of speak highly to perhaps
to his taste.
To his taste, right. Yeah. But it's. I just don't think it's I don't think it's fair game in terms of evidence for intent to rape.
But as far as intent goes, that text is there for
The text, I think, is more problematic.
The text is the most incriminating in my mind. Yes. But you think about the porn videos, the two non-consensual videos, and you think about the article that he wrote.
True. Admittedly, that was 3 years earlier.
Right. But still, the fact that there's this sort of theme running through that no maybe doesn't mean no.
At the Peace Table, we're bringing in an ex-boyfriend of Riley's. You might have heard him on the radio before. His account has piqued the interest of the public, regardless of the fact he will not be testifying at the Montgomery trial. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, thanks. I didn't expect so much attention from this.
I know. Can you tell us about your sex life with Riley?
No, I'm sorry, but I need to interject. If you're about to spew the details of her sex life all over the internet, I will get up and leave right now.
I'm not asking him for irrelevant details. I just want to ask him about her perineum tearing.
I don't know whether it was tearing for sure. I just know she found sex uncomfortable and she'd bleed sometimes.
So that could have been from tearing.
I guess she said at the time it was break spot bleeding or breakthrough bleeding, but it seemed to happen after sex.
Would she cry?
Okay, that's it. Stop. The reason he's not on the stand is because of a little thing called Rape Shield. It's supposed to protect victims from being violated again.
Stand down, counselor. We're not in trial.
And maybe Rape Shield should apply to the media, too. It's disgusting that you're filming a segment in which we're sitting around talking about this poor girl's vagina. It's sick.
I don't think evidence of a recurrent medical issue.
No, you just asked him if...
I'm trying to see if she was in pain.
It's a slippery slope from clinical to voyeuristic. No, this is wrong. And you know what? I won't be a party to it.
Jacob, did the DA's office speak to you?
No, no one's talked to me.
Not the defense either?
No, but I didn't know Keith Montgomery's name before all this. He probably never heard mine. And anyway, Riley would probably still say it was menstrual blood, and maybe it was. I'm not a doctor.
Do you think your testimony would matter to the jury if they got to hear it?
I'm not a lawyer either.
You've heard the attorney speak. You've heard the expert speak. You've heard the statement of Keith Montgomery. But the person you have yet to hear, the complaining witness. Riley Page speaks. Next time on Deliberations.
My name is Riley Page.
I need you to walk us through what happened that night.
I said, get off me. I said, stop.
Are you okay?
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: jury, Lindsay Purcell, Ross Denyer, Lindsay Fishkin, Kevin Bryan, Drew Phillips, and Lindsay Mallard. News and Courtroom: Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Lindsay Rousseau, Molly Wheaton, Jada Toller, Matthew McNante, and Brad Gilliam. Editorial advisement by Jessa Nicholson Getz from the exceptional podcast Getting Off. Next week, we're speaking to a special friend who's had the unique experience of being both a victim and falsely accused of sexual assault. We'll see you Monday.